holding on. Memtes Amud Beis, 5 lines from the bottom. We mentioned yesterday how the Yehuda and how the Yehuda was very poor, and some of the other Chachamim in that time also. We had we got into this discussion by way of talking about Ian Geisa, which we mentioned in the Mishnah as Maisik Deirik. We mentioned Reb Tarfon himself, and we mentioned Reb Yehuda himself was very poor. So now, continuing on that topic, the Gemara says 5 lines from the bottom of the Testament days. Dveisu de Reb Yehuda Nafkas. One time, Reb Yehuda's wife went out. Nafkas Amra. She bought some wool. Avda glima de hutri, and she made a nice coat out of it. And from then on, Kad Nafkas Lashuka, whenever she would go out to the marketplace, Mikasyabe, then she would wear this coat. Mikad Nafik, Rabbi Yehuda, Lotzaluye, and when Rabbi Yehuda would go out to Davin, have a Mikasi, then he would wear it. Or Mitzali, and he would Davin. An interesting point, a number of the Mephoshim say over here that all of them say he considered it as important as a coat, which implies that it wasn't really much of a coat. In fact, when you get down to it, in order not to be over on, we know the Torah tells us that men aren't allowed to wear women's clothing and vice versa. So if you have, if Yehuda and his wife were sharing this coat, then it must mean it wasn't really much of a coat. And nevertheless, Yehuda was very happy with it because a Yid should always be happy with what he has and thank Hashem for it. So he was so happy with it. The Kad Michsi day, when he would wear it, have him a Baruch Sha'atani Me'il, he would make a bracha to Hashem, that Hashem clothed me with a coat. So even though we're talking about it was basically just a piece of material, here the Gemara is calling it a nice coat, but the fact is it can't have been that nice, or else it would have been primarily a man's garment or primarily a woman's, but Rabbi Yehuda was so happy with it, they would actually make a bracha on it. There's an interesting, by the way, an interesting side thing, a little sidelight in history that has to do with these words, Baruch Sha'atani Me'il. Now you have like this, there's machlokas we've shown him on the discussion. We know when you have a talus, such as we wear, where you cover your head and most of your body with it, so there's no question you make the bracha l'hisatif betzitzis on it, because you're wrapping yourself in it. Wrapping your head and your body is definitely considered wrapping. The question would be, what if you're wearing only a talus cotton? What if you're wearing a talus cotton which does not cover the majority of the body? You just cover your body. It doesn't cover the head. You just cover your body with it. Would that also be something that you'd make l'isata petitis on it? Or maybe should you be making a different bracha on it? So there's a discussion about it among the Rishonim. The Vilna Gaon has a discussion about it in one of his notes on Shulchan Aruch, and he points to our Gemara over here and says that, listen, you see over here that Rabbi Yehuda is saying Sha'atani Me'il, that he's referring to it as that Hashem clothe me. Otani is otta, the shodesh otta, which means to wrap, is basically the same as the shodesh otaf, which also means to wrap. So therefore, so we see over here that Yehuda is calling this that he's wrapped in this garment, even though on the face of it, now he's not necessarily wearing it over his head and most of the body. So wouldn't that mean, or maybe the contrary, the Yehuda is wearing a coat that the Pashtus he would wear, on his head and most of his body. So that would be a reason to show that you say Sha'atani only when you're doing that. So the Tzemach Tzedek discusses this in one of his Shuvahs. And he says that, this is not a valid proof from our Gemara. And he goes on to discuss the issue and say it is true. The point that the Vilna Gaon is making is true. But, uh, So here, what it is you have the Ramah and other poskim that say that it would only be considered itruf only if it's on the head and most of the body. And the Vilna Gaon brings a proof from all Gemara that not, because on the face of it, this did cover only his body, and yet he made a bracha shal tanin on it. So the Tzemach Tzedek writes, the Eina Tshuva, that's not a valid proof, because you could equally understand our Gemara a different way. However, then he goes on to say, it's true you have proofs from other places that seem to indicate that indeed on something worn only on the body, you would say also the Hisata for Tzitzis. So we don't do that. We say Al Mitzvah Tzitzis. But anyway, what happened was then that when they went to print the Tzemach Tzedek's Tshuvas in Tofresh Mem Dalet in 1884, year after the Rebbe Marash passed away, the printers in Vilna at that point were misnagging. They saw this line that the Tzemach Tzedek says, the Eina Tshuva. They misunderstood the Tzemach Tzedek to be attacking the Vilna Gaon, and they weren't going to have that. This is the Vilna Gaon city, after all. So they put in a different line instead. They replaced that with a line where the Tzemach Tzedek says, I didn't manage to understand Dvarav HaKadoshim. So then they printed it that way. When the copies with that came to Lubavitch and to other places where Chassidim lived, they were very bothered by that. What are you doing? And going and altering the Tzemach Tzedek's words. And besides, you completely misunderstood him and made that the rest of the sentence makes no sense. So they made an effort to get that page reprinted. Nevertheless, there were some copies with one and some with the other. When Kohos reprinted it in the Uli Tufshins, they printed it with the correct words, the Eina Tshuva. And in fact, the Yitzchak Kuttner wrote at the time to the Rebbe to ask what's going on with that. Why did you change the words of the Tzemach Tzedek? And the Rebbe tells him the story and explains on the contrary, those printers had changed the words. Anyway, so that's just a little interesting tidbit based on this Baruch Shaltani Ne'il that we have over here in the Gemara. Anyway, getting back to the story. The Gemara says, Zimna Chod the Gozer of Shimon Gamliel Tanisa. One time, Reb Shimon Gamliel, who was the Nasi at the time, declared a fast. Might have been because there was no rain, might have been because of some other trouble that they were having. Reb Yehuda also of Beit Tanisa. And Reb Yehuda did not come to the house of the Nasi where they would gather together on the Tanis to daven. Amrinle, so they told Reb Shimon Gamliel, the reason why Reb Yehuda is not coming. Because Loi Isra Kisuya, he doesn't have a garment to wear. So that could mean at the time his wife happened to be using the garment. We said before that he and his wife shared it. Could also be Tamar Shrub, but that's a possibility. Or it could be that even though as proud as Rabbi Yehuda was of it, he would wear it when he goes to daven privately or when there's not a lot of people around, but when he's going out to the house of the Nasi, he didn't consider it to be something important enough it's not something appropriate to wear to the house of the Nasi. Especially we're saying he shared it with his wife. Again, we're saying, fine, it wasn't an issue of a Yuvash Gever, but nevertheless, it wasn't the kind of thing he would want to wear in front of the Nasi. So, Shodr Le Glima. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel sent Rabbi Yehuda a coat that he should be able to wear. But Rabbi Yehuda did not want to accept it because he didn't want to accept presents. But he wanted to show the messengers that it's not that he's accepting it because he wants to insult the Nasi or something. Dovid Sifsa, he picked up corner of the mat that he was sitting on the floor. But Amalei L'shlucha Chazi Mai Ika, and he says to the messenger, take a look what there is over here. All of a sudden, a nest happened, and there was a pile of gold coins over there. So that was B'derach Nes. But he says, Miu L'nichali Dis Ani B'hodin Alma, however, I don't want to have Hanar in this world, and therefore I'm going to turn down the Shimon Gamliel's gift. So if we say, like Marasha says, that the only reason he wasn't wearing the coat is because it wasn't available at the moment because his wife was out with it, then B'pashtus, as soon as she came back, he put it on and went to join them. If we say it was because he figured it's not appropriate to appear in the house of the Nasi wearing such a coat, then it means that he didn't end up showing up. Either way, the point is, in other words, when we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda was poor, we're saying essentially he was poor by choice. He could have chosen to ask Hashem for riches, and Hashem would have granted them to him, like he just did then. But he didn't want to. He didn't want to take away from his schar in Olam Haba. We have similar stories about other Tanoim and Tainis and in other places. Yeah. Talking about another Tana who was poor and then became rich. So here's the story of Rabbi Akiva. We had the story in Ksuvus a few months back as well. So here the Gemara is telling it again with some details different. There are details in all Gemara that aren't there and vice versa, and there are some details told slightly different. The Gemara says Rabbi Akiva is scadshus le brate de bar de kalba savua. Rabbi Akiva, Kalba Savur's daughter was Makudish to him. So over there we have the story, over there we have the more detail of it, that he was about Kalba Savur's shepherd. Kalba Savur was one of the rich people of Yerushalayim in the years before the Churban. So Rabbi Akiva was working for him as a shepherd, and Rachel, Rabbi Kalba Savur's daughter, realized that he has good midas, and if he's an Amoritz, but if he works on it, he can become a great Talmud Chacham. And so she tells him, I'm willing to marry you if you go and learn Torah. So sure enough, she was Mekodesh to him. Shama Kalba Savur, Adra Hanam, Tol Nichse. Kalba Savur heard about it and made a neder, asking her to have Hana from any of his property. Oslavis, the Sivale, the Sitva, nevertheless, she went and married him during the winter. There are different Yosois over here. The Sitva would mean in the winter, and the point is, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that even though that they had very little, to their name, but the other, there is also a Jewish of the Sitra that they got married in secret. Anyway, Havuganu Beitivna, they were lying in the straw, because the only place they could find to live was a storehouse for straw or something like that. So they're lying over there in the straw. Have a commandit le tivna min mazli. She used to have to pick out straw from his hair. Straw would get stuck in Rabbi Akiva's hair and beard, mastama, and she would have to pick it out. That's a couple of the mafoshim have that dirsa that she had to pick out from his hair. Tosfos has it that way, for example. On the other hand, the Ran has it the other way around, that he was picking out straw that was getting stuck in her hair. Anyway, so now, Omalah, and he tells her, Ihavoyli, if only I had the money, Raminolach Yerushalayim Dedava, I would place on you a Yerushalayim of gold. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that they had ornaments in those times. They had in particular a kind of tiara that would have a picture of Yerushalayim on it, and rich people would make them out of gold. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, if only I had the money, instead of there having to be straw that you're picking out of my hair or that I'm picking out of yours, according to the different Yerushalayim, instead I would get you a Yerushalayim of gold. And in fact, all the Mephoshim point out over here that eventually he did. Eventually, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, eventually, as we're going to go on in the story, Rabbi Akiva became rich, and he did that, and he actually made that for her. Marsha points out, actually, that at the end of Sota, it says that after the Churban, the Chachamim made a Zera not to wear such tiaras anymore, and this story may have been after the Churban, although the chronology is not so clear, but in any case, even if it was, he says, this is only for Chassanim and Kalas, so also here she was already long since married by the time he became rich, so therefore there'd be no problem with her wearing such a tiara. The Yerushalmi, by the way, tells this story in the Sefer Shabbos, where it discusses such jewelry, and it mentions that Rabbi Gamliel's wife, Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi at that time, saw Rabbi Akiva's wife wearing it, and she asks her husband, why don't you get me one like that as well? And Rabbi Gamliel tells her, listen, did you go through as much as Rabbi Akiva's wife did in order for him to learn Torah? So no, she deserves it for a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. In fact, there are other places where it says that she actually cut off her hair to sell for Sheitlach or whatever in order to earn money to be able to support the family while Rabbi Akiva is away. So she, I can say, Rashami itself says it over there. So she certainly deserves to have this tiara, Rabbi Gamliel tells his wife, in a way that you didn't have such Mesiras Nefesh as she did. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Ose Eliyahu idmi lohoin ka'anosha. Eliyahu anavi came. Now he wanted to show them that after all, there are people worse off than them. That way, they should realize, as bad off as we are, she used to be a rich man's daughter, and now she's sleeping in the straw. They should realize that there are other people even worse off than them. So Leo came, idmi lahoin kanosha. He appeared to them as a regular person. The kakori above, and he was knocking on the door to ask them to let him in. Omulahu, when he comes in, he tells them, Hovali Purta de Tivna, please give me a little bit of straw, the Yoldas Itzi, because my wife just gave birth, the less thing it dam, laguna, and I don't have anything for her to lie on. I don't even have any straw for her to lie on after the birth. So they gave him some straw, Mapashkus, Omulah Rabbi Akiva Insei, and afterwards Rabbi Akiva tells his wife, Chazi Gabra, that's the Tivna la Yisle. Look at this, you have a person who doesn't even have any straw. Compared to him, look how much we have, that at least we have straw. Well, Omrale, this is, by the way, an example of the kind of good midas that she saw in him in the first place that made her want to marry him, that he has the potential to be a Talmid Chacham, that he has, among other things, this good midah of trusting in Hashem and not complaining about what they have. So Omrale zil havi beiram. She tells him, go learn in the yeshiva. That was after all why she married him in the first place. We all know, we learned as kids, the story of, he sees the water dripping on that story is in a medrash, where he sees water dripping on a rock and making a hole through it, and he realizes the Torah can also penetrate my head. There's a lesser known story also where he actually started going to cheder and then was embarrassed because he's a grown man sitting among the little kids, and then, his wife had to make a whole play act for him. They had a donkey, says this medrash. She planted a garden on the back of the donkey and then asked him to go and take it to the marketplace to buy food. And of course, everybody made fun of him. And this happened day after day. And after a while, people got used to it and stopped making fun of him. So then they could realize, you know what, by the same token, I go to the cheder. They may make fun of me for the first couple of days, but eventually they'll get used to it. Anyway, so now she tells him, go away to the yeshiva. Also, tauti srei shin kamei rabbi Yezer, rabbi Yeshua. So he went away to learn for 12 years by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. We learned in Ksubas, this Gemara was also over there, because we had stories of several Chachamim who did that, who went away for 12 years. We talked about over there why they used to do 12 years. One idea was, it was the normal time, because normally a man would get married at 18, Ben Shimon Asur L'Chuppah. On the other hand, Ben Shloshim L'Koyach, at 30, he has his full strength and he's ready to work for a living. So therefore, the normal thing was 12 years. Now, Rabbi Akiva, obviously, that doesn't apply. He was already 40 years old at this time, but still, that was the standard was 12 years. There's a different idea that we brought over there from the Chidah, I think it was, that says, in 12 years, you have a little more than 613 weeks. So every week, they would be focusing on the dinim and all the ins and outs of one of the mitzvahs. And so over 12 years, you could cover kol ha-Torah for them. Anyway, also the base. Say now, after the 12 years, Rabbi Akiva is heading home. Shomam in Achorei Beis, as he was standing behind his house, he overheard the ka'oma lochad rosha l'dibesu, a certain rosha was saying to his wife. He said, the guy says very sarcastically, Shapir Ovid Lochabuch, you know what? Your father, Kalva Sarua, did the correct thing by disinheriting you and throwing you out of his house. Chada de la Domiloch, first of all, this husband of yours is nothing like you. The Ran says it means he's not from an important family like you. He's not from an important family like you. Tosfa says that Bechal, he's not suitable for you. So that's first of all. Among other things, first of all, Rabbi Akiva's family was poor, and Kalba Savor's was rich. Kalba Savor's also had yichus. There's a Yerushalmi says some place that they once checked into Kalba Savor's lineage and found that he was descended from Kolev, which is, by the way, one of the reasons, the usual reason we say why he was called Kalba Savor is the Gemara tells us in Gittin. He was very rich and a very big Baal Tzedakah. Anybody who went into his house hungry like a dog, a kelev, would come out saveya full. But the Yerushalmi mentions the kindness that also they once checked into his yichus and found that he descends from Kolev, which is another reason to call him Kalba Savua. Anyway, and meanwhile, Rabbi Akiva was a Ben Gerim. His father, Yosef, was a Ger, and the family was descended from Sisra, the Kanani general from the times of the Shoftim. Anyway, so that's another point. So he's not a Baal Yichus like her. He's not rich like her. So that's, first of all, this guy is arguing to her. And second of all, he's left. He was a living widow all these years. 12 years either way. He has no concern for you. By the way, the Gemara in Ksubas also mentions this, but it doesn't mention him saying. First of all, the Gemara there doesn't say that it was a rosha like here. It says it was Ahusava, an old man, which is a Tosfos in Cholin that says that many times in Shas Ahusava means a Yoa Navi. And second of all, over there he doesn't say anything about Rabbi Akiva being unsuitable for her like here. He just says that it's what a pity that he's left you for 12 years. So basically, was it Aliyo Anovi or Stam a good yid, or was it, like we're saying over here, a Russia? That's apparently the Gemara here, and some of us differ on that point and also what he told him. Anyway, Omrale, so she says to this guy, Eat sois would be thee. Actually, if my husband would listen to what I say, if I had a way of telling him, then he would go away and learn for another 12 years. So don't tell me that it's bad that he left me for 12 years. I'd be happy for him to go away for another 12 years. Omar, so Rabbi Akiva says to himself, since she has given me permission, I had her lachori. I will turn around and go back home. So sure enough, hoder ozel, so he went away again. Why didn't he at least go home and say hello to her and whatever? There's a vote from Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz, one of the Balei Amusar, who says that it's much greater to learn Torah uninterruptedly than to interrupt in the middle. If he would have interrupted even just to go in and say hello, then it means, if not, he doesn't have the 13th year and the 14th year and so forth when he goes to learn Torah is not a 13th and the 14th year. In effect, it's starting over again with a new cycle of learning Torah, a first year, a second year, and it wouldn't have the same impact on him. So for it to have the same impact, it had to be without interruption, and therefore he turns right around and goes and then goes back. So when he finally came back after 24 years, Osta be'esrin be'arba alfin zugi talmid, he came back with 24,000 pairs of talmidim. Now, we usually say that he had 24,000 talmidim, and that's how it said in Ksubas. So that would mean 12,000 pairs, not 24,000 pairs. So it seems the word zugi doesn't belong over here in the Gemara. It seems it's supposed to be 24,000 talmidim, like it says in all the other places. Anyway, nof kula alma la'afe, everybody came out to greet Rabbi Akiva, but after he comes from Meipa Fa'afe, she also got up and was going to go and greet him. Now, the Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. It might be that she realized that this is Rabbi Akiva, her husband, coming, and therefore she wants to go out to greet him. It might be that not. It might be she knew that a tzaddik is coming to town, and she wanted to go out and greet him. Whatever the case. So Omalohahu Roshia, the same Rosha came and confronted her, and he says, Ma'atlahecha, where do you think you're going? Especially you don't even have nice clothing. You don't even have nice clothing to go see him. Omrolay, so she answers the in the Gemara in Ksubas, it wasn't a Rosha who tells her, it was actually her neighbors who were well-meaning, and they asked her, why don't you borrow some nice clothes from us rather than going out in what you're wearing? And she gives them the answer, like over here, Omrolay, she says, Yedeya tzaddik nefesh behemtoy, the pasuk says the tzaddik knows the soul of his animal. In other words, he knows how much I put in, how much effort, how much tzar I did for his sake. So the Mefarish printed over here under Rashi's name, that some say that she knew that was Rabbi Akiva, and she said, I know my husband is not going to look down on me because I'm wearing whatever I'm wearing. The other possibility, the Mefarish says, is she didn't know it's Rabbi Akiva coming. But she said, whoever he is, he's a tzaddik, he's not going to look down on me for the clothes that I'm wearing. This that she used the pasuk Yedeya Tzaddik Nefesh Behemtoy, by the way, there is a girsa on the side that says, why is she mentioning Nefesh Behemtoy, Davka? So there's a girsa on the side, actually, that says that instead of Nefesh Behemtoy, it's actually supposed to be a different pasuk, that there's a different pasuk from Mishlei that also begins with the word Yedeya Tzaddik, but continues Yedeya Tzaddik Din Dalin. That the Shittuk Obesis brings this, that Yedeya Tzaddik Din Dalin, the pasuk says that Tzaddik knows the proper judgment for the poor. So therefore she's saying, I may be poor, but the tzaddik, whether we say that she knew it was her husband, whether or not, he knows the proper judgment for me. He's not going to judge me, but he's not going to judge me unfavorably because I don't have anything better to wear. So Osisli Chazuyele, she came to appear to him. Kamadchan Lorabanan, and the Chachamim, the 24,000 Talmidim were pushing her away. They didn't know who she was. In the Gemara in Ksubas, we had the detail that she comes to Rabbi Akiva's feet and falls down there and kisses his feet. Omalohoin, so Rabbi Akiva tells them, Hanichula, leave her alone, Shaliva Shalachem Shalahu. What's my Torah and your Torah is all hers. In other words, the only reason that I became a Talmid Chacham is because she pushed me to it, and the result is that everything that I know in Torah and everything that you, my Talmidim, know that I taught you all comes from her. In fact, the Rebbe once pointed out in the Sicha to women, when you think about it, we say the whole Torah Sheval Peh, as we know it, comes through Rebbe Akiva. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Stam Mishneh is Rebbe Meir, Stam Sifra is Rebbe Yehuda, Stam Tesefta is from another one of the Chachamim, is from another one of Talmidim of Rebbe Akiva, and so all of them, the Gemara says, all of them are following Rebbe Akiva's opinion in Torah. So therefore, it comes out that all the great Sforim that we have of Torah Shabbat Peh, Mishnah, and the Tesefta, and the Sifra, and the Sifri, and so forth, all come to us through Rabbi Akiva. So it comes out that the entire Torah Shabbat Peh stands on the schus of this one woman, Rachel, Rabbi Akiva's wife. The Gemara continues, Shama Kalba Savua. Kalba Savua heard that of the that of Tamid Chacham had come to town. Also, the Ichalam Nidre, he went to be Matur Nedr. So in the Gemara and Ksuvas, we have a little more detail. He didn't realize that it was his former shepherd, Akiva. So but meanwhile, it's been many years. He regrets that he disinherited his daughter and he wants to be Matur Nedr. And Rabbi Akiva points out to him that if you had known that this son-in-law of yours is going to learn Torah, or would you have made the Nedr? And he says no, and therefore that's a valid Pesach for Nedr. So we discuss there, and the Ran discusses over here on Omer Beis, don't we learn later in the Masechta, and we already touched on it earlier in the Masechta, that in Poskin ben Noilad, Tosfos mentions the point over there also, you can't be Matur Neder based on Noilad, based on something completely unexpected, something that could never have been reasonably expected, that would happen. And the answer is, Tosfos says over there, and the Ran says essentially the same point over here, that actually it is very common that a person, when he goes away to the Beis Medrash to learn, he should learn at least something. So therefore, it's not so noilad. It's a normal enough thing that Kalba Savor should have been able to reasonably foresee it. Anyway, the Ishtirai, and he wanted to be Matur Neder, the Ishtiri, and sure enough, he was Matur Neder, and the Gemara tells us in Ksuvas that then he gave, and the Hagoz Habah gives the Girsa over here as well, that he gave her, the Mefoshim explain over here, based on the Gemara in Ksuvas, that he actually gave her half his wealth. So to begin with, he had given her nothing, now he gave her half his wealth. So now the Gemara says, min shis mili i'ata Rabbi Akiva. There are actually six different ways that Rabbi Akiva became rich. The point of mentioning that, Marsha says, is we shouldn't think that Rabbi Akiva charged the Talmidim to teach them Torah. After all, he had 24,000 Talmidim. He could have made a nice pile of money from that. But no, because we learned earlier in the Masechta, Ma ni b'chinam atatem b'chinam. You're not supposed to charge for learning Torah. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva didn't charge them for that, but rather he became rich in various other ways, some of them being mice and nissim, as we're going to go on to discuss in the Gemara. So the first one was that this wealth that Kalba Savua gave him and his wife. Why Dr. Six? Ben Yehoyada mentions a point that he deserved it for being for toiling in the Shisha Sidra Mishnah. And he gives a few other reasons over there, some of them based on Kabbalah. Why Dr. Six? Anyway, first of all, in Kalba Savua, the first one was, as we said, from this wealth that Kalba Savua gave him. The second one is min Ayala Disfinasa. Disfinasa. The second one is from the ram of the ship. What does that mean? Gekol sfinta avdin le min eina. When they make a ship, they make some kind of min eina. There's a different gersois over here, what exactly the word is, but they would make a figure of a ram or some other, or not a ram actually, the pashtus we mean over here, not ayil, which means a ram, but ayol, which means a deer or a gazelle. So they would make a decoration for the ship, shaped like a deer or a gazelle. The idea is, in other words, it would be for a simon tov that the ship should move as fast as a gazelle. So the actual girsa min eina, what does that mean exactly? The Rosh explains that the word is actually supposed to be ona. The word ona is the Aramaic word for sheep. So it would mean that they'd have a sheep or a ram shaped figure. Whatever it is. So they would make it for a good simon as like a figurehead on the front of the ship. And they would also use that. They would also store the ship's treasury inside of that image. Zimna chada an shiua al keif yama. Now, one time it happened that sailors left that figure of the deer or the gazelle or whatever it is on the shore when they loaded up the boat. They forgot to take it. Rabbi Akiva came and found it, and there was money inside, and that was the second source where he got his wealth from. The third one is Omin Gavza. The third one is that he became rich from a chest. So what happened? Zimna Chode Yohiv Abba Zuni Zuzi Lusfunoi. One time, Rabbi Akiva gave four zuzim to a bunch of singers. So he told them, please go bring me something, go buy me something with the four zuz. The only thing they were able to find was a chest that they found by the seashore. They brought the word gavza, actually, many of the Mephoshim translated over here as a number of the Mephoshim here translated as a chest. However, the Rosh actually translates it as a block of wood. Anyway, so they brought, so all they found was that, a chest or a block of wood. So they brought it back to him. And they told him, Ovid Marana Ale, Marar Rebbe, do something with it. So it could mean, for example, that could be, the Mephoresh explains, it means wait for it, please, Rebbe, please wait with it, and we'll see if we can bring you something better. Another possibility Marshall mentions is it can mean that, it can mean if we go like the Rosh, that it was a block of wood, then it would mean that they're telling him, go ahead, Rabbi Akiva, use it for whatever it is you're going to use. What would you use a block of wood for? You could use it as a chopping block to chop things. Ishtakas down a mole dinri, and it turned out to be full of gold coins. So if we say that it was a chest, then it means it was possibly a chest of gold coins that had been on a ship. If we say, like the Rosh, that it was a block of wood, then Marashar explains, when Rabbi Akiva was using it as a base to chop wood or do some other task on, then it broke open and they found that it was full of gold coins. Now, where did it come from? The Zimna Choda Tavas Svinasa, one time previously a ship had sunk. The Kula Iska have a Mochis Bahu Gavza, all of the money of the ship was in that chest or in that trunk of a tree. The Ishtaka Bahu Zimna Dimin Disrukisa, and so it turned out that so they found that at that point that it was from Disrukisa. So what is that now none of them are Mephoshim over here explain that line, the Ishtaka Bahu Zimna Dimin Disrukisa. So it might be that it doesn't actually belong in the Gemara. It might be it was put in by mistake. But with that said, there are Mephoshim who learn that it means that it's that Srukisa, the Oruch mentions in other places that Srukisa means Arabs. You have on this week's parasha when it mentions the caravan of Yishmaelim that was passing through and the brothers sold Yosef to them. So that you have in the Chumashim you can find what's called Targum Yerushalmi, a more expanded version, fragments of a more expanded version of the Targum, and it translates. And it translates the word Yishmaelim as Srukoi, which would be the same Srukisa, would be the same word Srukisa as over here. So in that case, it would mean, in other words, that this turned out when they asked about it, it turned out that this chest had come from Arab merchants. This chest or this tree trunk, as the case may be, had come from Arab merchants. So far we have three things that Rabbi Akiva became rich from. The fourth one is Omin Matronissa. The fourth one is from a Roman lady. So all of the Mephoshim over here tell the story based on a Medrash. Rabbi Akiva one time, and Talmidim one time needed a large amount of money. Rabbi Akiva heard about a certain Goyish lady who he could borrow money from. So he goes to her, and she's very respectful to him. She says, sure, I can lend you the money, but I want a guarantor. I need the money by a certain time. So Rabbi Akiva tells her, fine, Hashem and the sea will be the guarantors for it. And they made up a time. He's going to come back on a certain date and pay her back. Then when the time came, Rabbi Akiva didn't come to pay her back because he was sick. So the Ran actually doesn't mention the detail that he was sick. The Ran just says that that when the time came, then Rabbi Akiva didn't show up. And then, he says further on, Nisraf Rabbi Akiva, implying that at the time he was sick. So he didn't say that at the time she was sick, but that's the implication from later in the story. The other Mephoshim must say explicitly that Rabbi Akiva was sick at the time, so he couldn't make it to her. So now it was on the day of the payment. And so she goes over to the seashore and she starts davening. She says, Hashem, I'm sure Rabbi Akiva has a valid reason for not coming, but the fact is, I did tell him I need the money by this date, so I asked for you and the sea to be guarantors. So please fulfill your commitment. So then Hashem arranged that all the way, far away in Rome, Rabbi Akiva and this lady lived in Eretz Yisrael. In Rome, meanwhile, the emperor's daughter went crazy and went into her father's treasury and took out a whole chest of gold and precious stones and whatnot and threw it into the water in a fit of insanity. And Hashem made it that it didn't sink into the water. It traveled from one wave to another until it landed on the beach in front of this lady, and she opened it up, and sure enough, there was lots of money in it. So good. So she was paid back. So now, later on, when Rabbi Akiva recovers, he comes to her with the money to pay, and he says, I'm sorry, I couldn't make it. I was sick at the time. She tells him, don't you worry, your guarantor paid it off for me, and in fact, here, you can take the extra money. The Ran has it that he tells her that you can keep the extra. In other words, you know, I lent you $1 million. This chest has $1.5 million in it, so you can take the $500,000. The Mefarish rather says that you don't even need anything. You can keep all the money that you brought to me to pay because Hashem already paid me back. Hashem already paid me back more than I lent to you through this chest. Whatever the case, that was another source. That was another source. That was the fourth source of how Rabbi Akiva became rich. The fifth one is Umin Ishto Shel Turnus Rufus. The fifth one is from the wife of Turnus Rufus. So on the face of it, we usually think that Turnus Rufus was the guy's name, but actually the Mefarish says over here the guy's real name was Rufus. Turnus was just a title. Ben Yehoyada goes still further. He says the whole name, Turnus Rufus, may have been a title for some kind of Roman official at that time, because in the story we're going to have over here, the implication is that he died during Rabbi Akiva's lifetime, whereas we have in Midrashim that there was a Turnus Rufus who was presiding over Rabbi Akiva's trial before he was executed, before he was killed as one of the Asarah Rabbi Malchus. So it may be Ben Yehoyada says that Turnus Rufus is a title for a certain kind of Roman official. But, I mean, the Pashtus, you could also say, you know, a lot of times Roman officials tended to have the same names running in their families, so it could be father and son, or grandfather and grandson, or whatever. Anyway, so what happened? So again, all the Mefarshim tell basically the same story. This Turnus Rufus, we find many times that Rabbi Akiva, he would debate Rabbi Akiva on Psukim and on other things of Yiddishkeit, and Rabbi Akiva always got the better of him. He always showed that Turnus Rufus doesn't know what he's talking about. So the guy got very bothered by it. So he finally decided that one day he comes home very upset, and his wife asks him what's the matter. He tells her. So she says, you know what? I know that the Jewish God hates immorality. What I'll do is I'll go and seduce him, and that way his God won't be on his side anymore. So she does. She beautifies herself, whatever. She goes to Rabbi Akiva. The Mefarish adds that she even when she came over there, she exposed her leg, and instead of being attracted by her, Rabbi Akiva spit on the ground and laughed and cried. So she asks him, "What's that?" He tells her, "I'll answer you two of them. I'm not going to tell you the third. The reason why I spit is because you come from a tipa surucha. You, like any other human being, come from a putrid drop." So why should I be attracted by your beauty? I cried over the fact. The fact is, you are a very beautiful woman, but one day this beauty of yours is going to be rotting away in the dirt. As far as why he laughs, he says he didn't want to tell her because he knew Baruch HaKodesh that eventually he's going to marry her. So what happened eventually? So she realized that she's not getting anywhere with him. She asked him, in fact, is it possible for me to do tshuva? And he tells her yes. Eventually, when her husband, Turnus Rufus, died, she became a Giyotis and married Rabbi Akiva, and then she had all the wealth that she herself owned, the stamina that she inherited from her husband, and brought that into the marriage with Rabbi Akiva, and that's the fifth way that Rabbi Akiva became rich.
Why Tshuva? Okay.
Well, she says Tshuva, I mean, she means, in other words, you know, like this, I've been living my whole life as an immoral goiter, and even now I came as a married woman to try to seduce you. Is there any way of making up for that? So that's what I'm saying. So she herself, The Ran has the version that he herself says that she came up with the idea, you, Turnus Rufus, give me permission, and I will go and I'll go and try to do this. So So that was the fifth way that Rabbi Akiva became rich. And the sixth way is from Ketiah Bar Shalom. The sixth way is from Ketiah Bar Shalom. The Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah, the story, that unlike the previous stories, the Mephoshim give them over here at some length, because they come from the Drashim that otherwise people might not be familiar with. Here, this one is a straight Gemara in Avodah Zarah, so all the Mephoshim just refer to the Gemara over there. The story is over there that one time there was a Roman emperor who hated the Yidden and wanted to wipe all the Yidden in the empire out. He says to his advisors, you know, if a person has a dangerous infection on his leg, what do? You cut off the leg, save the body. The same way the Jews are like an infection in our kingdom, in our empire, and we have to get rid of them. So this Roman nobleman or senator or whatever it is speaks up, and he points out to the king, it won't be part, he points out to the emperor, you won't actually be able to accomplish it. First of all, there are Jews all over the world, not just in the Roman Empire. Second of all, people are going to look down on your empire from now on. They're going to say it's a malchus ketia, it's a cutoff, it's a genocidal empire that you got rid of an entire nation in it. So the emperor is forced to agree that the guy has a point, but nevertheless, he still sentences him to death for having the chutzpah to speak up against the emperor. So as the guy is being sentenced to death, the Gemara mentions over there, he actually made a bris milah on himself, because a Roman lady says it's such a pity. She says it's like a ship that's going into port without paying the harbor fees. It's not going to be allowed to dock. The same way you were just moisa nefesh on behalf of Jewish people, but you're not going to get to enjoy their Gan Eden because you don't have a bris milah. So he makes a bris milah for himself right on the spot. And the Chachamim gave him the name Ketiah Bar Shalom. Ketiah means cut off. First of all, because he had used in one of his arguments to the emperor, he says, they'll call your kingdom a cut-off kingdom, and because now he cut off his bris milah, and Bar Shalom, because he goes to the Shalom of Gan Eden. Anyway, so then, as he was being sentenced, he announces, he says, all my money should go to Rabbi Akiva v'chaveva. And the Gemara explains over there, Rabbi Akiva explained that means half goes to himself, Rabbi Akiva, and the other half goes to the other Chacham. So that's the sixth way, in which Rabbi Akiva became rich.
Well, he doesn't promise that we'll get rich in a certain way.
We're saying that the fact is, during Rabbi Akiva's lifetime, these various six things happened. That's the point. We said before, Marushal said, you might think, look, he had 24,000 Talmidim. We could have easily charged them each a few dollars to learn by him, and he'd become rich that way. But no, he wasn't going to take money for learning Torah, so instead the Eivishter arranged that he became rich in other ways.
He brought the story because he took off his father's...
Well, no, we brought it in our Gemara over here, ultimately, because we were talking about Chachamim who were poor. Right. We were talking before about Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so now the Gemara digresses.
There was a difference.
What?
There's a difference between the story of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda didn't want to have an hour from this world. Rabbi Akiva didn't have that needer, apparently.
There's different ways of doing it. There's Gemara in Brachas, for example, that says that a Talmid Chacham, when he's traveling, has the right to act like Elisha and have Hanah from his host, like Elisha did from the Isha Ashunamis and her husband, or he has the right not to, like Shmuel HaNavi did, where wherever he traveled, he took all his household necessities with him. So it's just different kinds of avoida. Different tzaddikim have different kinds of avoida. Some of them have the avoida of working more with the world, and some less so. So Rabbi Yehuda was on one level, Rabbi Akiva was on a different level. Not that either of them is right or wrong, Chas V'Shalom. Each one of them is right according to their appropriate way, or according to the appropriate way of avoida for them. Besides which, when you get down to it also, with Rabbi Yehuda, it was open Maisa Nissen, that there should be gold under the mat over there, which there wasn't before, was open Maisa Nissen. All of these things that we're saying over here are Malubash B'derech Teva. The fact, for example, that Talbot Savor gave him his money, it's reasonable enough. Once under his daughter, he's going to give her money. It could happen that you find a chest or a trunk or stump of wood, and it turns out to be full of gold coins. So it was Bashkacha Protis that it came to that kid, but there's not openness involved necessarily.
Why did he have to marry Talbot Savor's daughter when he had, apparently, he had a greater schus than Rabbi Yehuda coming from a family of Gerim.
He married Talbot Savor's daughter. He didn't have any schus in yet. He was still an Amoraim. Right. The whole point is, she married him knowing the potential that he has. Anyway, let's go on. So the Gemara tells a similar story. Rav Gamda Yohib Dalad Zuzi Vesfunoi. One time, Rav Gamda gave 4 Zuzim to a bunch of sailors, La Asuya behind Midam, to bet that they should buy something and bring it back to him. like with Rabbi Akiva before, Moyashkahu, they couldn't find anything that was worth spending the forces on. Asuale behind Kofa. Eventually they found a monkey and they're bringing that back with him. They're bringing that back with them for him. Ishtimit, as they were bringing the monkey, it escaped from them. It went into a hole in the ground, into a cave. They started digging to get the monkey out and bring it back to Ravganda. They found the monkey is sitting over there on a treasure of jewels. And they brought Ravganda, all of them, all the jewels as well as the monkey. Which most of the Mephoshim point out is really the Fnim Meshuras Adin. But Ravganda had not done any kind of kinyan on these jewels. They could have kept them for themselves, or at most they could have given them only some of them. But nevertheless, they did the Fnim Meshuras Adin. Marashah points out, there's Gemara at the end of Kiddushin that says, Hasaponin Ruban Chasidim. Most sailors are Chasidim who go the Fnim Meshuras Adin because they're constantly exposed to danger on the water, and therefore they tend to realize how much they depend on the Eidishna to save them. So here, these Saponim, these sailors, obviously were in that category, and therefore they're going the Fnim Meshuras Adin.
We learned that when we spoke about the Gemara, that different people, different onions they have to give, so we learned.
Yeah, we learned that sailors only have once every 6 months. Right. That's something
we
else.
Learned that, so we learned then. That they have a moon.
Okay, yeah. Actually, with that said, though, the Marcheshes, one of the great Gaonim in Poland before the war, explains. He says that actually, al pi halacha, since they were acting as Rabbi Akiva's shluchim, not Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Gamda's shluchim, they would actually have been required to give him at least some of the jewels. So that wouldn't be l'fnei Meshuras Hadin. That would actually be strict halacha. The fact that they gave him all of them is l'fnei Meshuras Hadin.
And the monkey.
Yeah. Yeah, the monkey has a pet, I don't know. Okay, so now, since we're talking about Chachamim who were poor and later on became rich, so now we have the next story is also about one of the Chachamim who was poor, but not only poor, the focus of the story is that he was not very attractive to look at, Rabbi Yeshua. So the Gemara tells the story over here. It also tells it in Tainus. Omrele Bas Kesel, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. One time, the emperor's daughter said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, how could it be Torah Mefu'ara, B'Kli Mechur, such a beautiful Torah, but in such an ugly vessel? He was not handsome. The Rosh says particularly his face was black or dark. So that it could be from learning. It could be actually there's Gemara in Chagiga that mentions that he fasted. At one time he fasted a lot because he had said something that was slightly disrespectful to Beis Shammai, and he fasted a lot till his teeth became black. So it could be from that. We also find in Brochus and in the Yerushalmi over there, and in the Babli and the Yerushalmi and Brochus, that he worked with charcoal, making needles. So that also he may have become black from the soot. Whatever it is, he wasn't a very attractive person. So she's asking him, how does it come about that such beautiful chokhma should be in such an ugly cave? Omalah, so he says to her, Lindi mi beis abuch, learn from how you do in your father's household, in the emperor's household. What kind of containers do they put wine in? Omalah, b'moni defachra. So she tells him, in earthenware kalim. He says, Omalah, he says, kula amu b'pachra, ba'atun b'moni defachra. What is it, right, that everybody else keeps their wine in earthenware jugs, and you in the emperor's household, you also keep it in earthenware jugs? It's only appropriate that you should be putting your wine in gold and silver cases. Sure enough, she went and poured all the wine into silver and gold vessels. And it went sour because it spoiled, yeah. Omalah, so he tells her, so it is also with the Torah that it's preserved better in an ugly keli than in a beautiful one. In Tainus, it has a slightly different version that the emperor asks her why she did that, and she says, Rabbi Yeshua told me, and the emperor calls in Rabbi Yeshua and asks him, why'd you give her such advice? Oh, my wine is spoiled, and Rabbi Yeshua tells him what he tells him in the Gemara over here. So the Gemara asks, well, don't you find that there are people who are handsome as well as learned in Torah? Omalah, so he answers her, or in the Gemara in Tainus, he answers the emperor, Ihabu sonu, true, but if they didn't care about their, if they didn't care about their appearance, tfei, habu gmirin tfei, then they would learn even more. In other words, it's true. You can have people that Ibishan naturally made them handsome, but when a person doesn't worry about his appearance and he's focused on learning Torah, then he learns so much more. So in his particular case, he's saying that the Eibishter made me naturally not handsome, but even if I was, I wouldn't pay attention to it, because that's not the ikur of what a person is about. So Lamaisa, you know, you have all kinds. You have people who had hadras upon him and were tremendous to men chachamim. And then you had others who, as the Gemara is going to say now, about Shmuel, who were not so physically attractive, but were nevertheless great chachamim. Yeah. So now that brings us to another story. The Gemara says, Hahida asil kanei de Rabbi Yehuda min haudah ledina. There was a woman who came to Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora, from Nahaudah for Din Torah. So it could mean that she came from Nahaudah to Rabbi Yehuda's, so Rabbi Yehuda lives in Pumbedisa. It could mean that Rabbi Yehuda himself was visiting Nahaudah at the time. Whatever the case, point is she came for a Din Torah in front of Rabbi Yehuda. The Ischaivus Mindina, and she lost the Din Torah, and now she's obligated to pay. Omrulay, so she says to Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel Rabba Hochi Donon, would your Rebbe Shmuel have judged me like that? Maushah says that she's not saying that as a question, she's saying it as a statement. You should know, many years ago I had a similar case, and your Rebbe Shmuel judged me, and there was the same psak din. Anyway, so he asked you that way. Do you know him? That you're saying that you were by a din Torah by him. So are you familiar with him? Omrulay Ain. She says yes. Let me describe him. Gutsa, he was short, the rabba crazy, and he had a big stomach. Ucham, he was dark skinned, the rabba shine, and he had big teeth. Amalah, so Rabbi Yehuda says to her, Bazuya causes, would you come over here to insult Shmuel? In fact, the Mordechai learns from this an interesting point. Now she could say, what do you mean I came to insult him? I'm just describing factually what he looked like. But nevertheless, we don't accept such an argument. When a person is mevaza tamar chacham, we don't accept an argument. I didn't mean that. I meant something different. So he realized she's obviously deliberately insulting Shmuel. So he says that woman, meaning she, should be in chayim. Poko umesa, she burst and died as a from the chayim that was put on her. Yeah.
And this came from who? The chayim came from.
So the chayim was Rabbi Yehuda, said that he should put her in chayim for different. So Rabbi Yehuda had been Shmuel's student. Rabbi Yehuda had been for many years a student of Rab. Then when Rab passed away, he became a student of Shmuel. Shmuel lived 7 years after Rab. So he knew Shmuel well. We find in many places in Chas where Rabbi Yehuda calls him Shinina. I call him by the nickname Shinina. So yeah.
Which Rabbi Yehuda?
The regular Rabbi Yehuda the Amora in Chas, Rabbi Yehuda by Yechezkel. Yeah. Interesting, by the way, that it comes out because of that, because of this woman's insulting statement. Nevertheless, it comes out Shmuel is, I think, the only Amora that we can say anything about what his physical appearance was like, and because of her description. Okay. We said in the Gemara, Umutu Bebeitza Trumita. Now we got into all of this by way of talking about Maisik Beira, by way of talking about various porridge or farina or whatever type dishes that a person might make a neder not to eat. Now we said if a person makes a neder not to eat tavshil, where we define that tavshil is anything that's eaten with bread, then he is allowed to eat a Beitza Trumita, because that's not eaten with bread. So my Beitza Trumita, so what is a Beitza Trumita? Omar Shmuel, so Shmuel says, let me explain to you how important it is. Avda de Ovid Law Shavi Alpha Dinri, a servant who knows how to prepare a Beit HaTurmita properly, is worth 1,000 zuz, because he has a very rare talent. Or the Rosh says a different explanation. What it means is that the egg itself, if you know how to prepare such an egg properly, it would be worth not the Rosh says that, actually Tosfos, that it would be such a thing would be worth 1,000 zuz. So what's the deal? How do you make it? You put it 1,000 times into hot water and 1,000 times into cold water. So maybe not 1,000, Shitimul Kabetz says literally, but over and over, you keep on doing it in hot water and cold water, admit zutra, until it becomes small, until it shrinks, to the point where you can swallow it whole. So then the person swallows it, the iskiva. If a person has some kind of injury in his stomach, some kind of pain in his stomach, sorich Allah, then something from that will stick to the egg, the kadnafta ba'asya, and later on, when it comes out the other end, when he excretes it, then the doctor can look at it, see what is stuck to it, and he'll know, my sama misvele, what kind of medicine you need to prescribe this guy, because then now he'll know what kind of sore or ulcer or whatever it is the guy has in his stomach.
Yeah, look for what's coming out of the fungus.
Well, because you think about it, they didn't have x-rays then, they didn't have x-rays or MRIs or whatever. So this would be basically the equivalent. You're having something pass through the body and it brings out with it whatever it was that was, that's in the stomach.
What would be stuck in the egg that it would...
So, for example, you could have, let's say the person has an ulcer in his stomach. So now you have some cells or some blood or whatever from the ulcer now stick to the egg, and now the doctor realizes what the guy has and how to treat it. So that's why Shmuel himself was a doctor. So Shmuel is very impressed by this treatment. It's the only way, you think about it, it's the only way to be able to check for internal injuries. So therefore, it's a very valuable thing. Yeah, that's the point. In other words, so if you have somebody who knows how to make such a thing, then such a slave is worth 1,000 zuz, or the egg itself is worth the egg itself is worth 1,000 zuz. Over my mitzi, and he also knows how to cure this. So he knows my sama mitzi, right? What kind of medicine to prescribe the guy over my mitzi, and how to cure. So Shmuel have a bodik nafshi b'kulcha. Shmuel used to check himself using a kulcha. Now, the Ran says, I don't know what a kulcha is. A number of the Mephoshim say over here that kulcha is actually a different name for this beta tumita. So Shmuel did know how to prepare it, or we had somebody there who did know how to prepare it, and he would actually try it out for himself. On the side over here, it comes from the Oruch that explains that the word kulcha is related to the word kelach, which means a stalk. So it means that Shmuel would do the same kind of thing, but instead of using a beta tumita, which is very difficult to prepare, instead he would use a stalk of cabbage or of some other kind of vegetable and swallow it whole, and it would have the same effect. But it was a very hazardous treatment, adam satrin and inoshi beisa alei sarein, until people in his household, his wife and other members of the household, would be pulling out their hair in anguish, because after he swallowed it, it would take a while until it comes out. Meanwhile, he's in danger of having swallowed that, and therefore, they'd be tearing out their hair in anguish. Is he going to survive the treatment? But there you go. So now the Gemara continues. In this connection, we're talking about various kinds of unusual foods and having an Eved who knows how to prepare them. So the Gemara says, so by way of introduction, Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Maisris. Now you have like this. You know the Torah tells us in Parashas Kisetze that when you have a worker working on your field or your farm or whatever, you have to allow him to eat on the job. So he's harvesting grapes for you, for example. He's allowed to eat grapes while he's working. Same thing with other kinds of food. But one of the rules is that he can only work from the actual species that he's working on, not something else. So what about when you have subspecies within the same kind of food? So the Mishnah says, Hoya oisa b'klufsid, if the worker is working on harvesting or doing whatever with klufsin, which is one kind of figs, lo yechob of nice sheva, he's not allowed to meanwhile eat from another tree that's growing b'nois sheva, which is another kind of figs, and vice versa. B'nois sheva lo yechol b'chlufsin, and vice versa. If he's working on a b'nois sheva tree, he's not allowed to eat from a klufsin tree because he's only allowed to eat from the actual min that he's working on and no other. If he makes a deal with the balabas, of course, that's different, but we're talking about the basic din that the Torah says that he's allowed to eat. So the question is, my klufsin, what are klufsin exactly? And the answer is, min d'teini to obdin min hoin lafti. They are a kind of figs that they use to make lafda, which is a kind of porridge or a kind of soft food that they would make out of mashed figs. So particularly they would use klufsin for that purpose. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Ahu gavra de yohim abdelachavre, there was a man who gave a servant, a slave to somebody else, lag muri alfa mini lafdi. The deal was that the slave who knows how to make these things is going to teach him to make 1,000 different kinds of this lafta. So you have this porridge or whatever made out of figs. There would be many different ways to prepare it. So the slave knew 1,000 of them. So he's lending out the slave to the other guy to teach him that. Or maybe he sold them to him, whatever. Anyway, Admir Tamni Meya. In the end, he told him only 800. Asmin in the dinner, so the other guy took him to Beis Din. Asmin in the dinner, Kamei the Rebbe. So he took him to Beis Din in front of Rebbe. You reneged on the agreement. You said you were going to teach me 1,000, and he only told me 800. Omar Rebbe, so Rebbe says, I want you to realize our ancestors at the time of the Churban say the expression in the Gilas Eicha, we have forgotten goodness. In other words, we used to have so much good before the Churban, and now as a result of the Tzaris of the Churban and the Gilas, we've forgotten all the good that we used to have. But in other words, they used to experience this good, and now they don't anymore. He says, "Onu after the Beinenu Loiru, we haven't even seen any such good with our own eyes." Like in other words, how comes it that you guys are familiar? Even 800 different kinds of food is an enormous number of different kinds of food that in our times we don't even know of such luxuries. So what's going on over here? There is a very interesting explanation from a Rebbe called the monastic Tshircha Rebbe or whatever. I how to pronounce it, I don't know. Anyway. He has a vote. He wrote a sefer and things about God and whatever and Jerusalem. And he explains the deeper idea behind what was going on over here. He says we find by David HaMelech similar numbers. We find where it says that David HaMelech used to be able to kill 1,000 of his enemies at one time, and then after the story of Bathsheba, he was downgraded and he could only kill 800 at a time. And when he was bothered by that, then a Baskel came out and said Rak Bidvar Uriyahi. So he explains what's his business. Back, only because the matter of Uriyahiki is why you lost the 200. And he has a whole lot of rikos there, why Dafka you lose 200. But anyway, the point is, he says that the 1,000 over here, so what was going on, David Avoda was in Yichudin, to the various ways that we talk about, Pikabala, to the Yachra Shnei, the Kutchabrichu, Shchinte, to unite the name of Hashem with the world. That great tzaddikim know how to do. So originally he knew all of them, and then later on, as a result of the story of Bathsheba, then he lost the ability to be able to accomplish some of them. In our story, the 1,000 kinds of laughter really refer to 1,000 kinds of yichudim. So there's two tzaddikim over here. One of them wants the other one to teach him all 1,000 yichudim. The other one is only able to manage 800 of them. So he comes to Rebbe. And Rebbe says, you know, look at that. Our ancestors, even David HaMelech was only able to accomplish 800. I'm amazed that nowadays there should be anybody who's even able to accomplish that 800 methods of Yichudim, those 800 great deep Kabbalistic concepts, let alone 1,000. So that will lead us into, we'll start talking in the Gemara tomorrow, a number of stories involving that Rebbe himself was fabulously rich. And we're going to go into stories about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Did you make a heck of a